Hello, and welcome to SearchCRM.com. I'm Lauren Horwitz, Executive Editor in the Business Applications and Architecture Group. And I'm very pleased to welcome back one of our hopefully soon-to-be frequent podcast contributors, which is Brent Leary, who's a co-founder and partner at CRM Essentials, a CRM consultancy and advisory firm. And today, Brent and I are going to talk a little bit about some of the upcoming trends and themes that we might expect for 2015. So, Brent, welcome.
Lauren, thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
It's always great to talk to you. And I have a feeling we're going to touch on a few different themes here. So I want to ask you, some of these are things that have kind of gained steam, I think, in 2014, but maybe they'll take shape in a new way in 2015. So I guess the first one I want to ask you about is trends in mobility. What do you see there? Do you see that as a big theme for next year?
I think that's going to be a big theme for the foreseeable years to come, because it keeps steamrolling in the devices. We started out with phones, and then we got iPads, and then we got things like the Google Glass, and now it's almost like we're going to be a watch economy or smartwatch economy. And even Samsung came out with something recently where it looks like a necklace. So I think we're as crazy as it may sound, I think we're still at the beginning stages of a lot of this, and we're just starting to see some of the creativity come out, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm already looking for my my Apple Watch at some point. I want to check out the Gear Fit from Samsung. So it's like I hadn't had a watch. I couldn't remember the last time I wore a watch, and I'm already looking forward to getting these smartwatches and starting to play with them.
And one of the things that has come up a lot on CRM is, you know, it's changed sales, it's changed marketing, it's changed even the way business executives are functioning in terms of the data that they're getting on these devices. And in a little bit, I'm sure we'll talk about wearables a bit more. But do you see all this as just sort of changing the whole way people are conducting business and getting information about their customers?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And when you think about kind of the, I don't know if the word maturity model is right or not, but the way that like iPhones and tablets and smartphones in particular, the way that they changed the landscape first of how our personal lives, how we kind of consume these from a personal or consumer standpoint, and then it carries over to the way we do business and the things that we can leverage these different technologies to improve the experience that we have when doing business. You can see the same thing that is going to happen with the wearables. I mean, you're already seeing things like the Samsung's Gear watch. You're running Salesforce.com on it, and you're being able to get your email on it, being able to get push notifications. I had a great conversation recently with the CEO of Financial Force. Now that's a cloud-based company that works, you know, back office applications. So you would think, where does that fit in with the back office? But they're already putting out and testing apps for the business folks that allow, you know, for example, one of the kind of the things they did with the Samsung Gear is tied into an HR system. So if somebody is sick and they're not able to come in, they can, you know, give some sort of notification to do that. And if you're in a meeting or something, and you can look down and see, oh, so-and-so is not going to be able to make it today, let me find somebody else. And it's done naturally using just looking at your wrist. So I think you're going to see different use cases come up for different areas of business that are completely in the business realm, where these the wearable technologies are going to play a pretty interesting and eventually significant role. And I can't wait. I think it's really exciting.
It is exciting, because it's just a whole different way of thinking about your workplace and the information that you get there. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
even...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You know, there's a lot of backlash with Google Glass. I think, you know, people are trying to still figure out, you know, where does that fit? And, I mean, even the folks at Financial Forest were, you know, playing around with that, and they came up with, you know, kind of a scenario where it's still going to be tough in terms of the cultural aspects, because sometimes people just don't like being around folks who have that Google Glass on. But there may be certain use cases, and they put it, you know, if you're working in some sort of distribution plan, or you're involved with inventory and stock, if you're walking through and looking at a box, having information pop up, you know, and you can see on your Google Glass how many are left in the box, or, you know, that kind of stuff, you can see, oh, now that makes sense. But I think it's also a matter of understanding there's certain cultural aspects that have to be addressed that have nothing to do with the technology. And then once we're able to do that, then I think you'll start to see these great use cases come up for even things like Google Glass.
So that kind of segues into the next theme that we were going to talk about, because I think it also involves, it's a great way to shed new light on customers, but it also raises some concerns about data privacy and being intrusive with customers. So let's talk a little bit about personalization and geolocation and other, you know, kind of customer experience trends. Where do you stand on that for 2015?
It's great that you mentioned this. I just participated in a study with the folks over at SAS, and it's called, you know, kind of a code name called the Personalization versus Privacy Conundrum. I just like saying the word conundrum, I think. That's the whole part of the exercise was to really try to figure out just what people are okay about when it comes to, you know, what does it take, or what are they willing to give in terms of their personal information, and what do they expect in return? And one of the things that came really rang through is if you want somebody to like you on Facebook or share your stuff on Twitter, that there's more emotion involved in that kind of thing. It's much easier to get somebody to share or like if they like you. But when it comes to giving up personal information, like doesn't have anything to do with it. That decision is coming strictly from the head. And what they're saying basically is, if you can show us that you can safeguard our information to begin with, the very first thing is you better show us that you can safeguard it. Then you better show us how we are going to benefit from your using our information or you asking for our information. And if you can provide us better deals, if you can provide us better service, then we will give you more of our information. But don't ask us to do it because, we like you. You got to show us that you're able to first safeguard our information and, just as importantly, use our information to give us better value. If you're able to do that, you have a much better chance of getting people to, engage you and provide kind of information that will allow you to provide better experiences. But it only takes one misstep, and you really don't get a second chance with folks when it comes to this. So that's the kind of laying the groundwork. But I think you are seeing companies who are making it easier for customers to trust them with their information to do some really interesting things and provide better products and services and experiences. You saw where Foursquare created a second app, the Swarm app, and they still have the other app for providing what they call more personalized recommendations. And they said that one of the reasons they did that was, A, they found out that not everybody wants to check in. You know, everybody may want great recommendations and great information on finding the things they're looking for, but not everybody wants to check in and say, hey, I'm over here. So they split the app up so that they, you know, people who do like checking in and that social activity, they can still do it. But the folks who are just really looking for better personalized recommendations, information, they have an app that they can go and use and get, you know, instead of getting the kind of the traditional Yelp or Hotels.com, that kind of recommendation where it's kind of the one size fits all. Foursquare said, well, let's take the 55 million pieces of information we have on things and on that things have been recommended, and we'll try to learn as much about what you need and provide you personalized recommendations that don't look the same as somebody who's completely different from you, who has they like hamburgers, but they like vegetarian burgers. And maybe you like hamburgers that are, you know, with barbecue sauce or with certain type of pickles. So if you say, I want a hamburger, show me the hamburger, the best hamburger places around, you don't get the same results, even if you are in the same place. And that's what I think you're seeing with personalization at the recommendation levels. You're seeing that, you know, when it comes to things like Amazon is doing with constantly looking for better ways to put better product or the right products in plain view of the right person. And so it's an on and on thing. I think it's a never-ending process that you're seeing people go through, companies go through, in order to provide the right offer at the right time in the right channel, right way. I don't think we're ever going to get away from it now because customers really are expecting, they really are expecting companies to cut through the clutter for them, make it easy for them to get what they want when they need it.
For more on CRM and some of the themes that we've been talking about, check out CertCRM.com. And until next time, I'm Lauren Horwitz.